This is the Andre Segovia Show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Andre Segovia Show. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of the program. Today's special guest is brought on because I need to talk about what's been going down with California, the most mismanaged state in the union. I used to say it was the richest state of the union. Resource rich, yes. Finances, I don't know anymore because of how messed up things have become. And with all the distractions that that go on, it's really hard to keep up, which is why this is the first installment in a series of Save California episodes that I'm devoting. And today, my first guest up on these installments is someone from the Howard Jervis Tax Association. Susan, by all means, introduce yourself to those who may not have heard of you or the organization.
Well, thank you, Andres, and thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Susan Shelley, and I'm the Vice President of Communications for the Howard Jervis Taxpayers Association. If you're not familiar with Howard Jervis, this is the organization that's responsible for passing Prop 13 in 1978 and protecting homeowners from crazy tax increases due to inflation ever since. And we're very proud to be fighting in the courts, fighting in the legislature, fighting for taxpayers everywhere in California. It's a great organization, and it's a member organization. So if you're not a member, you can join, and we'll tell you how a little later.
Awesome. Thank you. And that deserves an applause, by the way, because Prop 13, yeah, a very, very important. And when I think it was it was 2020, there were three propositions that came up in California. All three of them affected in some way, matter, or form property taxes and property rights. The one that was overlooked was Prop 19. I think what upset me the most, and I addressed it on my program then, and I'll reiterate it now, because as a former member of the Realtor Association, I must say I was very disillusioned with them when I saw that they're handing out all these pamphlets to tell us, hey, go talk about the benefits of Proposition 19. It's like, you guys were behind this, and you guys even used a former Howard Jervis member to try to sound like it was Howard Jervis actually behind this thing when your organization was actually actively fighting against Prop 19. But the capital that was devoted to fight against all the information, misinformation, disinformation on these proposition campaigns as tends to go to, were devoted to the other propositions that seemed to be a bigger threat. And when I covered it on my program, I didn't think Prop 19 was going to be as contentious. So when it was the number one checked in episode on my program, I kept adding more to it because people had questions looking into it. And I'm like, hey, it's like maybe even I was questioning myself, like, am I going to vote on this the right way? In the end, yes, I voted in the right way. No on Prop 19. But Prop 19 is now in. And a lot of the stuff that was meant to be intergenerational wealth, as I explained it, which is what my association supposedly in real estate wants to be able to secure for future families and this and that, including what they say is a minority-owned homeownership that they're trying to encourage. My complaint to them, and I did confront this to them directly in private meetings, I said, so why do you want to eliminate it? Because that's what that did. And now we have what I believe your organization coined it, the death tax, which is different from the other death tax that we call the estate tax. Right. So with that, this is kind of how you and I got acquainted on that meeting. There was an effort to try to put an initiative on the, I think it was for the primary, or was it for the general election?
It would have been for November of this year.
Okay. And that was with the intent to repeal Proposition 19, correct?
To repeal the death tax portion of it, not the whole thing, but just that portion that created a death tax.
Great. So for viewers and listeners that may not be aware, and I'll toss this over to you since you've been a little way more involved in this than I have. What is Proposition 19 as it stands today?
Okay, Proposition 19 was put forward, as you said, by the California Association of Realtors. At first, it was an initiative, but ultimately it went into the legislature and came out with a few changes. And what went on the ballot was a legislatively referred constitutional amendment based on what the realtors had done. And the realtors spent about $50 million on advertising, trying to convince people to vote for it. It just barely passed. We spent a very small amount of money over at Howard Jervis trying to defeat it because we were working, as you said, on other initiatives, which were also a threat to Prop 13. What this did is create a tax on people passing property to their children. Now, not an estate tax in the pure sense of being an inheritance tax, but the effect was the same. Because a long-held property, whether it's a home or a business property or a rental home or any kind of property that people have acquired through their lives, it had a tax assessment under Proposition 13, which could only go up 2% a year while it was under the same ownership. And when property was transferred to the children through inheritance or any other way, through a gift or any kind of a transfer from parent to child, initially, after 1978, that was being reassessed as if it had just the same as a sale, just as if it was a new owner coming in and buying it, mm-hmm. with the exception that people who were inheriting property were not buying it. They didn't necessarily have the money to pay the higher taxes. Because of inflation, when property is reassessed to market value, the new tax bill is substantially higher than it was even just a few years ago, because inflation is driving those prices on real estate to go up so fast. So in 1986, the legislature passed unanimously, and the voters passed by 75% a fix to that problem that said when property is transferred from parent to child, it is not reassessed to market value. It doesn't count as a change of ownership under Prop 13. That was 1986. Nobody really talked about it very much, but Proposition 19 included in it the repeal of that protection that had been in since 1986. And that's why it's a death tax, because now when property is passed from parent to child, it is reassessed to current market value. Mm-hmm. And if somebody has owned a house for 10 years or longer, the current market value is much, much higher. And there was only one exception that was put into the law for people who had a home like this, and that was if the children moved into it within 1 year and made it their own permanent primary residence, then they could keep the old tax bill, but otherwise reassessed to market value. And even if you moved in, if you later moved out, when you moved out, reassessed to market value as of the date that you inherited it, plus the inflation adjustments every year for a much higher tax bill. And commercial property, someone who owns a small little fourplex, an apartment building, reassessed to market value upon transfer to the children, no exceptions. Well, what happens to the tenants? And then what do you do if you own a building that's under rent control and you've just inherited it? Mm-hmm. And now you have a property tax bill that's based on the current market value, which is wildly unaffordable. Do you sell the building? Well, if you sell the building, what happens to the tenants? I think we know what happens to the tenants. They're out. Mm-hmm. So this is really very destructive. And when Prop 19 went on the ballot, people were talking about the other part of Prop 19 in the commercials, which was people who were wildfire victims or seniors could transfer their old tax bill to a new property, which is fine. That portability part is a very nice tax break for people who want to move because of those circumstances or have to move. And that was fine. But added to it was this death tax. So the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association is very committed to trying to reverse this. We did try, as you mentioned, to get it on the ballot this year. You know, there's a tremendous learning curve in explaining what this was. Yeah. And a lot of people had not heard of it. Even when they voted on Prop 19, they didn't know this was in it, and they're just finding out. So as we went through that process of gathering signatures, the pace was picking up tremendously. And more people were volunteering, more and more people were donating, more and more people were signing, but we ran out of calendar because the state law only gives you a limited amount of time to collect signatures, and we just ran out of time. But we haven't given up. We're looking at all the options.
Yeah, and it was just that very thing I had mentioned before we started filming this, is I covered every proposition that affected property. I'm a broker associate in Orange County, so I cover these things on my program. And some people would take it as like, oh, Andres is talking about politics. And I'm talking about policies that will affect your property rights, your taxes. And I have long stated on my program since I began, I started it really as a Real Estate 101 podcast that also talked about tech and how I made you be able to work smarter, not harder. But along the way, I had to address things that were affecting my ability to convince people that, hey, owning a home is the right thing to do. Because in California makes it really hard to be a homeowner. owner. They don't like you being the property owner because they think that you have an endless well of resources for why they either constantly tax you or they try to take away your property. Or in the case of property owners that have units, case in point, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Burbank, Glendale, other places that have real estate stabilization ordinances, they don't want you to have your property. They think it's wrong of you to rent it out to people. So it's, I had to call these things out. And that's where I got hit by big tech with certain things because people considered some of that political just to bring up these policies. So the extension of the reach to get the information out there was hard because it wasn't being fed into what is called the algorithm, where the big tech sends the information to the people it should reach. Instead, it's like, we'll just keep it here or throw it that way where it's irrelevant to these people. And the ones that need to see it won't. But there were enough people that were figuring things out, as you mentioned, even during leading up to November 2020, where they're like, what is this Proposition 19? So then I had to do a follow-up. I did three episodes devoted just for Proposition 19, two prior to November 2022, I mean, so 2020, and then one afterwards, because I, okay, what now? Even the Apartment Owners Association of America had to do an entire presentation on just what this was. And I think what shocked a lot of people was that technically, while it didn't go into effect, I believe was might have been April 15th or sometime late March, it was going to be somehow backdated to February 15th, that if you were going to make a move on your, say, living trust, that you had to pass on, as our attorneys told us, pass on all your properties to your kids right now so they don't get dinged by the tax. Well, by doing so, you just effectively destroy the credit of your kids, and that's not beneficial to them either. If in the case of my siblings at the time wanting to become homeowners, would not be able to achieve that. So it's like, what do we do now? And as you mentioned, we ran out of calendar, couldn't do anything else. And the living trust in the end is like, what was the point then if it didn't protect against something like this, if it was meant to be something to be passed on to our kids? So then more questions came on, and more seminars were also being done by the AOA USA. You know, it's sad that happened. And yes, there was a lot of push on the portability, the tax side, or the wildfire victims, which is almost nothing was actually devoted to that. But that was like the main selling point. The portability part, if I'm not mistaken, already existed though with participating counties. It's just that now it's statewide, three times. They can move up to three times, but if they never moved in 50, 60 years, why would they move three more times in their sunset years? It didn't make any sense. But there was one more proposition. It wasn't just Proposition 13, but I believe it was Proposition 187, the one that allowed, of course, Proposition 13 allows for the transfer from parent to child. But then there was one in the 90s, I think it's 94, 95, where it was the grandparent.
Right, the grandparents and grandchildren. I think 193 was the number, but
somewhere
that from memory. That was Prop 58 was the one in 1986 that said parents could transfer the property to their children. It was a home of any value and up to $1 million of assessed value of other property in addition to the home. So that was the rental property, the four-unit apartment building, a small business, up to $1 million of assessed value of other property was excluded from reassessment when transferred. 10 years later, they added a provision for grandparents to pass property to grandchildren if the children's parents were deceased. So the grandchildren would stand in for the parents in that case, and they could pass property to the children under the same rules, a home of any value, plus up to $1 million of assessed value of other property to the grandchildren without reassessment. Yeah. And these are very important protections because it allows families to increase their intergenerational wealth, because that's the big investment that most families make. A home is a big investment, and you pay for it for 30 years, sometimes more. Mm-hmm. And you pay the insurance, and you pay the taxes, and you pay the maintenance and the upkeep and all of that every year. And you want to pass that to your children. And the same with income properties. It's very difficult to make it in California. The cost of living is very high, and very often a job isn't enough. So parents want to pass to their children a rental house for additional income, or maybe for another family member to live in. And they want to pass that to their kids and have the kids hang on to it and pass it to their kids. And if you reassess to market value, when we're living through inflation like none of us have seen in 40 years or more, if you do that and you reassess to current market value, then the tax bill is unaffordable. Nobody has the income to pay that. Don't forget, every year, property taxes are not one time like an estate tax. It's not like an income tax, you pay it on the way in, or a sales tax, you pay it on the way out. Property tax is every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Yeah,
and that's just very, very different. So to raise property taxes is almost abusive to California families that are trying to build for the future and provide for their kids.
Yeah, and the campaign, which is, I mentioned it was the flyer. This is one of the flyers and the pamphlets to collect the signatures that unfortunately came up short, which was called Repeal the Death Tax. As you mentioned, it was to remove the death tax portion of it, not the portability or the, right, the wildfire things that Proposition 19 added in, which is, no one's arguing, all right, let it stay. But with respects to what it, the cost is not worth those benefits.
Right.
My opinion, especially as someone that has little children, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't think I have property for you guys to inherit anymore, little ones. That's how it feels.
It's really rough, because how do you provide for the income for those kids to make those tax payments? It's very, very hard. So what's likely is the kids sell the property. Okay, yes. So they have the cash. Well, great. You put the cash in the bank. The cash is depreciating and losing value to inflation. And even though interest rates are going up, they're not that high on your savings just yet. So the cash is losing value. The house that they had to sell, or the business property that they had to sell, is appreciating in value, but somebody else owns it. Mm-hmm. And your kids are out of luck. And why did we do this? Well, the answer is, a lot of people didn't even know they were voting for it.
Exactly.
They didn't know it was in there. And as they're finding out, they're pretty upset. And the assessors are not happy either, because they're having to send out letters to people telling them, when someone passes away, your property is going to be reassessed if you don't move, if it's a home, if you don't move into it and make it your permanent primary residence within 1 year of the death of your parent, it's going to be reassessed. What do you want to do? And they're like, what? What happened? What is this?
I deal primarily, I would say 80% or 90% of what I do for a living is dealing with probate and trust properties. So when I go to some of these inspections, some of the things that I've seen, it's just like, how are people living here? I keep thinking about this moment on The Simpsons, back when it was good. I don't remember what chemical spill or something that happened in the town of Springfield, but there's Moe's Tavern, the bar. If you remember, for those familiar with The Simpsons, it's Moe's Tavern, and Barney, who's always the town drunk, is at the booth, and these guys with hazmat suits going, they're like, "Men alive!" or "There are men alive in here." That's what always stands out at me. Every time I go to some of these properties, I'm like, how could anyone live like this? It's some places I couldn't even find the floor. I was on I was about 2 feet above. That's how much clutter was in these homes. So some of these individuals have been moved in forever. And their children, almost all of them are out of state. They have their own families and things like that. So for Proposition 19, I say that, oh yeah, just move in within a year and everything will be okay. Some of these houses are not in movable condition. And the paperwork has to be settled. And you're talking about displacing the family that's most likely out of state and is already rooted there, schools, work, and all that. That doesn't make any sense. So they, like most cases, and the cases that I do, they sell. And it is a sad thing to see this go on, and low information. I don't know entirely who would to blame for the low information voting. Is it the people don't do enough legwork? Back in the days, they say, hey, people, do your own research. Nowadays, with the way algorithms work and some of these tech sites will just show you what they want you to see that benefits a political ideology more than another, I just feel like, well, how do they do research now then? And I think what ultimately comes down to is relying on organizations like yours, where they are on the ground and doing these things. That's why you're one of the several groups that I'm bringing on my program to discuss that address at different levels and aspects of life. In this case, I would say like the taxation and fiscal matters, and others are more community based. Even ethnically, that they're targeting some of my groups because they're primarily like, we gotta inform the Hispanic voters and things like that. So that's why I'm like, whatever the result might be or cause of low information voting, there's enough groups out there that are doing their work. So I still think that people got to do the legwork. Don't rely on just the pamphlets that come through the mail. A lot of it's propaganda anyway. Vote for me, not for the other guy, for XYZ reasons. But it's in doing that legwork, though, even trying to make sense of some of these groups, like, well, how do we know they're on our side? And I think it comes down to is like, well, is what they're saying beneficial to you or beneficial to them? That's one way. And second, does it make sense? And I think when it comes to taxation, when people start owning more of their own things, they start realizing like, hey, wait, that actually does affect me. Because most people, especially if when we have a primarily renter's residency here in California, I think, oh, it doesn't affect me. It affects the property owner. Yeah, but when the minimum wage goes up at a restaurant, who's left paying the higher menu bill? You are. So
that's exactly right. People don't realize that when businesses are taxed, it raises prices. Because where's the money going to come from to pay the taxes? It comes from the prices. And in the case of apartments, if they're under rent control and the rent can't go up, then it's very likely that the building will be sold and turned into some kind of other use, whether it's condos or it's turned into a commercial building or whatever. Very likely that the tenants will be evicted if the building has to be sold. So in the case of Prop 19, all these older apartment buildings that are owned by mom and pop landlords, and it's something like 40% of all the apartment units in California that fall into that category, all those buildings that are older and have Prop 13 protected assessments that don't go up more than 2% a year, they would all be at risk when they were inherited. All those mom and pops, when that generation passes and the kids inherit the building, every one of those buildings will be reassessed to current market value. Yes, in Orange County, in Los Angeles, in Venice, Santa Monica, San Francisco, San Jose, what's going to happen? Well, the tax bill is going to be 1% of the new current market value. And that is the new overhead that the new owners have to pay. If those rents can't go up to cover it, the building is going to be losing money. The owners can't afford to lose money. They will sell and everybody could be evicted. Do you know Prop 19 could wipe out half the affordable housing in California in one generation? Whose idea was this?
There's an expression that says the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And quite literally, that feels like California.
Yeah.
A lot of well-meaning policies that just don't turn out that way, such as addressing the homelessness things.
That's right, and flames rising from the sidewalks.
Yes, it's literally.
It's not global warming. It's the road to good. It's the road to hell being paved.
Economic hell. That's why every time I think, was it Plato or Socrates talking about Atlantis that fell into the oceans? Like, no, everybody's concerned about the San Andreas Fault in California. I'm more concerned about the fault line from Sacramento because it's really thrown this economic hell. And more people need to be aware of such things. Now, they'll hear us talking about this and say, well, they're trying to get some kind of form of proposition to repeal certain aspects of Prop 19. Those efforts came up short. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean the fight ends there.
Yeah, exactly.
What else is in the pipeline, perhaps, with that respect?
Well, we could certainly do it again. And we're looking at how we would do it again and exactly, you know, what it would cost and how we would do it and making possible changes that make the petition shorter so that it can be downloaded and printed at home. Because we did things in a way that caused the petition to be about 6 legal sized pages. You had to include all of this constitutional text in the petition to show the voters. And there are different ways that we could write it. And the lawyers are looking at that to see if we can make it faster and easier to get that petition out to people because it can be downloaded, because this version couldn't be. That's one option. There's also the possibility that the legislature could make fixes to Prop 19 and put it on the ballot. They can propose a constitutional amendment with a 2/3 vote in each house of the legislature and put it on the November ballot. And there's still time for them to do that this year. We haven't seen that they want to do that. They like higher taxes, and that's the problem.
Yeah,
they like taxing people out of their property.
Yeah, they didn't want to give us a tax holiday on the gas tax hike to happen July 1st. Instead,
exactly. And they've been promising it for like 3 months and nothing.
Kevin Kiley was the one saying, hey, I propose a bill to let's do a tax holiday. It's like, no, instead, let's just raise it. It's like, wait, that's the opposite of what I was proposing.
Exactly. Yes. They hijacked his bill and they turned his tax cut into a tax increase.
That's all on film for people to see themselves. It was amazing to behold. It's like, whoa, this went the other direction so fast.
It's crazy. Horrifying. It's just horrifying. They love tax increases. They think everything's just going so well that people can afford to pay higher sales taxes, higher income taxes, higher gas taxes. Inflation raises your taxes because it raises the price that you pay for everything. So if it raises the price of the house you're buying, your property taxes are higher. If it raises the price of lunch in a restaurant, your sales tax is higher. If you get pushed into a higher tax bracket, your income taxes are higher, all at the same time that your buying power is declining. But the government is making out like a bandit because they're getting more revenue from you while you're suffering.
Correct.
And they're happy with that. This is just what happened in the 1970s before Prop 13. And this is why Prop 13 was passed by a 2/3 vote of the electorate. Because even with all the scare tactics that were thrown out there, and there were a lot of scare tactics, oh, the whole world is going to come to an end if this passes, voters said, we can't pay this. And you have a surplus in Sacramento because we can't pay this. And you're just collecting all our money. And they went to the polls and they said, whatever, we're passing this. And we'll just, it'll have to be better than what we have now. And of course, it was better than what they had then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think about like how in the case of Los Angeles, there's the incorporated areas of Los Angeles and the unincorporated areas of Los Angeles. Depending on where you are, you cannot, as a property owner, yet still raise the rent on those properties, even 2 years later. Eric Garcetti said when he declares the emergency over, plus 1 year. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Board of Supervisors is constantly extending that. Even more ever since they adopted RSLs some time ago.
Like, that's right. So this is the pandemic intervention supposedly to help renters. But at a certain point, you've got a situation where not only can property owners not raise the rent, but they're having trouble collecting the rent because of eviction moratoriums of various kinds. So this is very difficult. How do you pay your bills if you're someone who bought a small apartment building for income in your retirement years and you can't collect the rent and you can't raise the rent, even what's allowed under rent control, you can't raise the rent at all because of the so-called emergency, which is now 2.5 years into it for COVID. How is that fair? How is that going to work out for everybody? It's just going to keep people from going into the business of rental housing, which exacerbates the housing shortage because now you have fewer people who want to be owners of rental property. Well, how does this end? Is there going to be just giant tenements of government-owned housing and everyone will have to live in that? Is that how that's going to be?
That is their aim, because one of the aspects that is overlooked by the rent stabilization ordinances is the part where the government can take over your property for XYZ reasons. Right. And that is what they want, which is why I said, look, our rights begin with our property rights. And California keeps chipping away one way or another, coming at this. And even from a local level, it's scary to see. But it's also because there's this mindset from a familial standpoint. I've seen this happen to myself, to my family, and other extended family, that when they hear, oh, so-and-so bought a house, they're like, oh, I'm going to go ask him for a loan. Like, wait, what? It's like, oh, he bought a house. He has to have money. It's like, they got a loan to buy the property. They didn't buy it in cash. I mean, you'd be kind of silly to do that unless you have that. Unless it's pocket change to you, then it wouldn't matter. But that's the prevailing ideology, even from those Sacramento. They know it's not, but they behave in that way. It's like, well, you own property, therefore you can afford it. But what do you mean? Because I own property. You mean in name and theory I do, but I got all this mountain of debt that I got to pay off with the intended return on investment that I'm making here, that you are affecting the RORs here on. Yes. So it is crazy that it's mindset problem, information problem, education problem, whatever it might be, that if people ultimately need to do more of that legwork. But when they hear news of, like, we just did a little update on this before we started rolling. Well, at first it was reported that 16% of the electorate turned out for the primaries. And I told you I was going to announce it for the first time here on my program. I did not participate in the primaries this time. And it's probably the first primary I haven't participated in since I started to vote. I'm in Anaheim, and a lot of shenanigans are going on over here, primarily because of what's surrounding the Anaheim stadium deal, or the Angel Stadium. And at first it was like, well, it's always one side trying to go after that, because it looked like it was a left versus right issue kind of thing. And the FBI got involved, and I have my opinions about the FBI. So I'm like, I can't take him all that seriously, until the mayor, Harry Sidhu, then he just suddenly resigned. I'm like, something is afoot. As of this recording, he has no charges or allegations were brought up against him, but the image just doesn't look good for Orange County's biggest city. That threw into so much doubt a lot of the votes that I wanted to do for the primary. And with almost no time left to do any research, and even outlets that I reached out to were not responding. Like, you know what? I'm sitting it out. I just can't, because I don't know who these people are. And I'm not one of those that's just going to vote along party lines. I do my education. And I wish that more people that didn't know what they were going to vote for would sit it out like I did, instead of just going, I'll just pull a lever and see what happens. You probably just cancel someone else's vote that it mattered to them. You know, like you said, some people voted and they didn't know what they were voting on. That's why, to me, I sat it out. But 16% of a turnout, that's still like historically low. But there's an update to that. You had some sources to that we did quick research.
According to the Secretary of State's office, as of right now, it's at 31%.
And that's what the mail-in
turnout
ballots.
Statewide. And that's not great. It's lower than most gubernatorial primary years. In 2018, the final turnout was 37.5%. We're 31. And what's significant there is that so many changes were made to the election laws to try to increase turnout. I mean, everything from ballot drop boxes to mailing a ballot to every voter, no postage required to send it back. Multiple counties under the Voters' Choice Act, which have vote centers that are more convenient than your local polling place. Supposedly, you can go anywhere in the county and vote at any of the vote centers. You can register to vote the same day, all of that. Mm-hmm. And yet, with all of those changes, we're at 31% compared to last primary of 4 years ago, which was 37.5%. Mm-hmm. And the one before that, in 2014, the final turnout was 25%. And then the two primary elections before that were 33%. So we're 31. So all the changes we made did not help the turnout.
Yeah. Unless it's because they're still technically counting at this far removed from the primary. That has a lot to do with, I think it was it this year that universal mail-in voting became like the standard? Like it's from right here on out, it's a thing. You don't have to ask for it. Okay.
That's right.
I just think it's making people lazier. It's like, no, it can't wait. It can wait. I'm one of those that say, look, it's easy. Just one election day, vote in person, voter ID. That's you address anyone having any concerns about our elections. You address did they vote? They were there. They showed their ID and they voted in person. I think that's the best thing that I can do. I heard you on one of your recent episodes. Your experience, I think it was Agoura Hills, where you went to the voting center. You were dropping off a ballot.
Yes, I filled it out in the car because I'll tell you why. Because I wanted to know how the ballot tracks system was working. You know, you can sign up at the Secretary of State's office to have them tell you when your ballot is received and counted. And I thought, well, if I vote on the machine, I don't get that notification. So I took my mail ballot. I was in the parking lot outside the vote center and I filled out my mail ballot and I sealed it up and I signed it and I walked it in. And there was nobody there except for six people who were working the polls. There were no voters. And one of the poll workers jumped up and said, "A voter!" He was so excited. And he helped me walk to the black plastic box where I could drop it off. He said, "Here, let me just check and see if it's okay." And then he took it from me and he looked at it. He said, "It's perfect." And then he helped me push it into the slot, six poll workers, to help me drop off my mail ballot. You know, that's a lot of money that the County of Los Angeles is spending for these vote centers. And I really am not sure that this is necessary or advisable.
It's like what they set them up like days before election day, and I think
11 days. They open 11 days. Some of them open 3 days before, and some of them open 11 days before.
And maybe in Orange County, in my case, it was 3 days before. So I did vote, I think, 2 days earlier. One election, I did it where I did do a drop-off because I was curious. And I think I did mail that one and not do a drop-off in person. This last time, I dropped one off in person. I think both my wife and I went over and dropped off in person, walked into the center, downtown Anaheim. Nobody's in there except the ones that are working. Right. A lot of booths set up. I'm like, I wonder how much they're getting paid.
And they are getting paid. They're not volunteers. They are getting paid as they should. But you have to, as a taxpayer, you have to pay for finding and setting up these locations. And you have to pay people to be there. And we're also paying to mail the ballots out, and we're paying to mail the ballots back. And the processing time for mail ballots is much higher than for precinct ballots. Because, you know, the system used to be that everybody was verified when they came in or when they requested an absentee ballot. That was a verification stage of the process. Well, now, if you mail in the ballot, the verification is in the county offices when they receive it. And it takes longer. It takes longer to, they run them through a scanner. They check them with software to see if the signature matches the one on record. I don't know how accurate that is, but let's assume it's 100% accurate. It still takes time to do that. And then every ballot has to be fed through a counting machine there. And it's just more processing. And then all of the provisional ballots and the conditional ballots where people have to register same day and then it's not automatically counted. It has to be verified in some way. That takes longer. All of this takes longer. In a county of Los Angeles, there are 5.6 million registered voters. That's a lot of paper.
Yeah.
And many of those people who are on the rolls are not living here any longer or are not living any longer, and they're still on the rolls. So there's a lot of ballots out there that shouldn't be voted or can't be voted.
Yeah, and it does sound like voting has gotten so much more expensive and is not paying off. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, if it's not working, why try to make that the only way? It's right. Like going back to just like, well, let's make it one day. For some reason, I'll use this as a metaphor, analogy. My father-in-law, my in-laws are Taiwanese, my wife's Taiwanese. They are in Taiwan. So this one time they came to visit, we went to a plaza that had multiple restaurants where we were going to eat. And I was going to go to this Mediterranean restaurant. And I asked my father-in-law, who prefers to eat cleaner. He's like, and he didn't want to eat beef. I'm like, well, they have chicken over here. We'd like to come over here. He said no to that restaurant because it didn't have a queue waiting outside. The other ones did. So these have to be better because there's a queue there. So I'm like, I noticed that when people had to wait in line to vote, they complain about those wait lines, but they want to go vote. But now it's like, well, you just mail it in. You have 11 days to do it, or even longer, or whatever. And you still don't do it. It's like, is it maybe that psychological thing? It's like, well, it can't wait. That's what I keep thinking.
It could be partly that they mail the ballots out a month ahead. And people look at it and say, oh, is there an election? And then it's weeks later, you're going to get your sample ballot booklet or your city measures or your state voter guide. These all come at different times, usually after the ballots. This year, I got my state booklet first, then the ballot, then the county, then the city. And they all came just weeks apart. So there is this period of time where you think, well, I haven't looked at the candidates yet, and I haven't seen the campaign, and there's going to be more mail that's sent and more commercials and the editorial endorsements aren't out by May 9th this year. And there's just a lot, and people put it aside, I think, and then they forget about it. So, I think you might be right that it's not helpful.
And I also believe that it has a lot to do with I've been told never ask someone for their age, so I'm not going to ask you. But I'm assuming that especially based on the Zoom call that I was a part of, the way I heard everyone speak, that's not the way at least my generation votes. Because to them, if it's not in front of their eyes on social media, It's not happening. The amount of traction that a lot of these candidates were getting on social media was just like off the charts. And then the disappointing results with the primaries, like, dude, almost none of you guys went to go vote. What's going on here? And then we see the demographics of who did go vote. I think it was the primarily were over 65 or 55 years and older. Wait, but they're not the ones that are actively engaging on social media, giving the like, putting a comment, sharing it or whatever to people that are not even in the state that has no effect on our elections. But the point is that this metaverse, it doesn't translate to the real world.
That's been my experience. That's I agree with you. That's what I've seen since I've been following politics or working in it very closely. The people who are online don't vote. The people who are voting are not online. I mean, to generalize it. Yes, I agree with you.
And I do know that through social media, there'll always be more discouragement or encouragement for one way or another. I know for a lot of people, this was even before anyone might have questions about what's transpired in recent elections, even the recall election. But even before that, people would say, why am I going to vote? What's the point of it? They already bought the election. People were saying this like 20 years ago because it's like that's just a mindset that people had. And I did too until I finally was able to cast my first vote. It's like, no, I want to go vote. And then I realized when I started seeing the counting and the way things were, like, no, I think votes do count. Look, there's a chance here. And in the case of Compton, this was in the news recently, a judge overturned that election. It was decided by 4 votes. It just so happens the judge ruled that those votes were illegal or shouldn't have been counted. And it's like, nope, give the results to the runner up. You know, it's 4 votes.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine thousands of people say, yeah, my vote doesn't count, but right, your vote could be that difference. And they don't go. And then the results come in like, see, that's why I didn't go vote. No. That it's because you didn't go vote. Right. You know, so it's like,
well, that's true. I mean, if you look at 31% voter turnout, that's a lot of people who are registered to vote and did not vote. And that's not even counting all the people who are not registered to vote, who could be registered if they wanted to. Right. So if you really want to make a difference in politics, the best thing you can do is go out and register new voters. That gets everybody's attention, and turn out voters that you know. If you want to be organized, if you want to make a difference, pick out a small election where you can really see the impact, whether it's a tax measure that's on the ballot, or it's a school board seat, or it's a county supervisor. Pick out a relatively, not a statewide election, pick out an election in your area and make a concerted effort to get people to turn out to vote on one side or the other. Pick the side that needs to win to make things better, and turn out voters for that in significant numbers, because that's where it can change. You don't need new political parties. You don't need to overthrow the whole system with ranked choice voting or some other big reform like that. You just need to get people to register and vote in their elections. The mayor's race in Los Angeles, I don't think they've got 400,000 votes counted yet in that. And there's 4 million people who live in the city of Los Angeles. And that's 10% of the population that's deciding the mayor's race. So there's a lot of people out there who should be involved in something that's important to the future of their lives.
Yeah.
And they don't think it is, or they don't think it matters, or they don't think it can make a difference. But it will make a difference. If you get organized and you get people voting, it will scare the politicians. Then you can call them up and you can say, we're registering X number of voters. We're turning out X number of voters. We're harvesting the ballots from X number of voters. And you're toast if you don't return my phone call by 5 o'clock. Your phone will ring at 4:55 and they will call you back, because turning out the vote makes a difference in politics. There's an awful lot of people who benefit from the status quo. They don't want you to vote. They don't want you to get involved. They don't want you to run for office. They don't want you anywhere near the process.
Because they benefit. To know what you're doing.
Right. They benefit from having it just the way it is. But you don't. Yeah. So you have to get involved.
I know. It's like, okay, so why are we allowing such a small percentage to dictate all of our way of life? Because last I checked, I don't trust a person standing in front of me at a restaurant to order something for me. It's like, no, I can order for myself because I know what I want. You don't. You don't know what my preferences are. Maybe I don't want the burger with all these condiments on it. Maybe I feel like eating a plain today. But that's that's literally what's going on with the whole voting thing, which is that's what switched it for me. It's like, wait, if I can't rely on somebody to go know when I'm hungry and then go order me something the way I like it, why am I allowing it with my every way of life, particularly with fiscal taxes and social issues? It is crazy, and it requires that mindset shift. And this is primarily one of the reasons why when we were on the meetings, like I just to be able to talk to you with something like this would be a great honor, because it's a Howard Jarvis itself among my social circles. They're like, you're gonna have who on your show? It's like it's a name recognition of those that we know. It's like a lot of us in the business world. I'm a first generation American. My father, as soon as you heard Howard Jarvis, yeah, that's someone that we stand behind. You know, it's someone that's really helped us benefit to be able to get to where we are. Talking about my father, who's homelessness in a third world country. He was in El Salvador 40 years ago, whatever it was, and eventually coming to the United States to be able to make something out of himself, to end up having this real estate and to be able to pull his family out of poverty, to be the first generation, then him seeing his grandchildren and be able to enjoy the grandchildren. Primarily yesterday when we're filming, yesterday was Father's Day, to see that whole generation that was able to benefit from the blood, sweat, and tears of both him and my mom and my mother. You know, it's their marital bed was this mattress that my mom found in an alleyway in East Los Angeles, and she took it home and put it on top of four cinder blocks. When I was born, my crib was the baby plastic tubs, and she put a blanket in there and put me on top. They didn't have enough to put a blanket on top of me. That was my crib. To go from that to what it is today, and for the family the world over to benefit from all that hard work. And I'm like, nope, I know my roots. And I study my roots, and I pass on to my children. They're going to know this. It's important. And it all started with opportunity, real estate. And that's why when people are not aware, and I encourage on my program, graduate from being a renter to being a property owner. And if renters hate their property owners, like, all right, stick it to them. Be their competition. Become a property owner. That's all you got to do. And then it's like this whole the worldview changes when they realize, wait a minute, everything that I thought was benefiting me is actually hurting me. It's like, yes, that has been the echo of those that made that shift. It's like, now you're learning, boyo. You know, it's like people need to be more aware of these things, and everything requires input from themselves. You can't do everything yourselves, or Howard Jarvis Tax Association. There's only so much you can do without those of us being involved as well. That's why on that Zoom meeting, I chimed in and said, I became a member because I believe in the organization and what it's setting out to do. And more people should do that. Put their money behind organizations with clout. You don't want to meet your heroes per se, because you know some of those things can backfire. But if
no. It doesn't backfire. There really are heroes.
There are heroes.
And you're a hero. You're a hero to your kids for what you're doing. And when you hear people in Sacramento say everyone who owns real estate is rich, you're an example of how you get that way. I'm not saying that you're rich, but from their perspective, you own something and yeah, they want to take it from you because you're so, quote, privileged. Well, you worked for it and your parents worked for it. And you're entitled to it because it's yours. And that's how it is in a free country.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have the opportunity if it wasn't here. Earlier this year, I think it was one of the first ones that I did this year, I had the Orange County Apartment Association on. And they were fighting the rent stabilization ordinance that was going to be passed in Santa Ana. And at the time, we owned property there. We don't own it anymore. It's like, well, we escaped Los Angeles from all that RSO to start diversifying our portfolio, and it seemed like the RSO followed us. So it's like we picked Santa Ana, and Santa Ana happens to be the one with perhaps the strictest version of it. And like the OC, the acronym, it slips me right now, but they told me, it's like, more stories like yours are the ones not being told. And it they need to be told, which is kind of why I even changed the style of my program to be more interview format, because some of these things need time to be fleshed out, to be discussed, and later clipped out so people can see little clips in here and check out the longer interview. But the point is that there are human faces behind these things. Right. And there's people that are actively working hard to do these things. And every time someone just throws in the towel or just doesn't believe in it, well, that belittles organizations like yours or the efforts that you're doing, or these influencers that recently got red pilled, as the expression goes, and they went out, started canvassing, started getting people to register this and that. They were so hyped up leading up to the primary, and then the reactions thereafter, they weren't the ones on the ballot. They were the ones trying to motivate people to get out to the ballot. And they're like, you guys all said you're going to go. None of you went. No, it's like, it almost makes these influencers' time wasted. But they're looking to the next one and to keep going, and they want to, and I encourage them to do so.
They're doing the right thing. They might not have done it in the most effective way. Just sending messages online is usually not enough. You usually have to get people organized and into a place. You know, you have to get catering. It needs donuts. It needs pizza. It sounds silly, but it's true. You need to get people physically out someplace, and the COVID pandemic made that very hard. But typically, something that's scrolling on your phone is not going to motivate you to take action, because it's just one more thing in a world of many distractions on your phone. But when you get people to physically go someplace, you have a party and say, we're all going to fill out ballots. If you have any questions, come on over. That's a good way to do it. And then it's legal to take the ballots from them after they fill them out, seal them, sign them. You can deliver the ballots for them. It's called ballot harvesting. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It can be an honest activity. Mm-hmm. And you can encourage people to bring friends, and you can make it fun. And that's really important to do that, because all the messages in the world, all the memes in the world are just electrons flying past you. You need to be human at some point and get people in a room. And that's more effective, more time consuming, sometimes more expensive, but it's very gratifying to get people meeting each other.
Yeah. And I definitely agree. Like, yeah, I'm a techie guy, but I still believe in face to face, because it's like, I want to know the human face behind the name. Anyone calls a commenter, they don't like that. It's like, oh, can I speak to a human? I'm sick of this machine misunderstanding me as I'm trying to go through the prompts. So yeah, we all want the human face, but somehow human interaction in the real world is not something it's almost like a dying art form. It's like, no, I want to meet someone face to face.
Pizza and donuts. This is how you do it. Yes. Pizza, and donuts, big pot of coffee, a lot of soft drinks. This is part of, you know, it sounds really silly, but it's event planning in a lot of ways. To get people out to vote is a sort of event planning. And people think they should only do it when they get married. You know, there's some big party they're having for someone's anniversary. They think of event planning like that. But no, you have to plan small events and get people out to parks, to protests, to whatever it is. You have to get people out and talking to each other. One of the great things about a signature collection effort is that people were setting up tables. They were out there with clipboards. They were talking to people face to face. And we collected more than 400,000 signatures in just a few months. Mm-hmm. And it was very empowering, I think, for a lot of people who'd never done it before, to go and talk to people and answer their questions and meet them and hear their stories and get involved, rather than just blast an email and it goes into the void and then everybody forgets about it.
Yeah, and that definitely makes a lot of sense, especially when you might find you're connecting with people that are like-minded. Because if we're going to stick to the, my vote doesn't count, or one super majority party controls the entire state, well, at least 85% of the voters in San Francisco recalled the district attorney.
That's
the next one on the chopping block is Gascon. That is not a right-wing effort or anything like that. Like the media was trying to spin on what happened in San Francisco. Like the right wing in San Francisco, like, man, you guys are stretching it big time.
There's not even a right pinky in San Francisco, let alone a whole wing. It just doesn't exist.
Yes.
Now, it had to get pretty bad for people to do that, but it got pretty bad. So
yeah, some people
getting pretty bad in LA.
I was being labeled along with others. Misinformation when I did a series called News Roundup, and one of those covering any real estate news or things that affect real estate in the entire state, I covered San Francisco's poop patrol. And I know no such thing. It's like, yes, there's even a chart as to how much they're picking up on a daily basis.
That is true.
And people are like, no, it's being made up. Even the national news is like, oh, that's all made up. Nancy Pelosi, no, that's made up. It's like, you don't even know your own district, lady, because it's right there. And I think, yeah, people definitely have had it. And that went the same, or should be the same, for Los Angeles. And it's going to be very interesting to see, because after this recording, I think they have about 2 more weeks left to just have enough signatures padded, because I think they qualify, but they just want to have enough in case some of the signatures can't be verified or valid or things like that. Right. So it's going to be very interesting to see. Because that was not a right-wing effort either, as to trying to make it out to be. So in other words, yes, you can just get out there and do it. But that's just half of the story, because the next part is, once it qualifies, you still got to go vote to get him recalled.
That's right. The signature is just get it on the ballot, and then you have to go and vote. Exactly.
Yeah, because that's what happened with the recall effort of Gavin Newsom, where it's like, well, I already signed. No. You signed to get the election. Now you got to go vote to get him out. And those same people didn't turn out.
A lot of people did not turn out. Yeah. And, you know, some of that, in defense of the people who are confused, I have to say that there's a lot of money put into making you confused. There's a lot of effort that goes into misleading ballot titles, and not in the case of the recall, but in case of the ballot measures, misleading ballot titles, misleading advertising, misleading mailers, misleading descriptions in the booklet that you get, misleading ballot summaries. There's a lot of stuff that goes on that's engineered to confuse you. And it does a fine job in most cases of confusing everybody. You can look at some of these ballot measures, and if you have a law school degree, it's hard to understand what they're saying. And that's intentional. Yeah. That's intentional. Yeah,
absolutely. Which is why places that digest this information to at least make it into small bites for those that don't have the time to digest all this or even understand it, organizations like yours make it possible to better understand these things. And I think that's a great note to end on, because I encourage people to check out information provided by your organization. By all means, please let my audience know where they can learn more about you and anything else that you feel people should be aware of leading
Absolutely. Thank you for that. You can go to hjta.org. That's Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, hjta.org. And you can click join us and be a member. It's only $15 a year, and we'll work for you anyway, even if you're not a member. But if you're a member, you're strengthening the organization, and you're making us more powerful in Sacramento, in the media, in the courts, everywhere. So hjta.org. You can also sign up for the free email alerts. You can listen to the podcast. That's all free. And you can just be aware that this is a place you can go to get information before the election about candidates, about ballot measures. You can get recommendations for taxpayers. If you join, you'll get our newsletter, which comes out 3 times a year. It's a little newspaper full of information and articles about issues that are important to you if you live in California, whether you're a property owner or not, because there are a lot of other taxes that affect everyone who lives here, like the sales tax and utility taxes and all kinds of things that are causing your gas tax, that are causing the cost of living to go up in California. And we do what we can to inform voters and taxpayers about all of this. So go to hjta.org and join the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to all of you that are working behind the scenes, for those that are not even aware you guys exist. So the more they know, the better. So thank you very much, and God bless you all. And don't hang up. We're going to wrap it up here. So for those of you that are listening on the podcast, you know the MO. Go to the show notes of this episode at www.thenewsagova.com, and you'll find every single link that Susan just spelled out for everyone. And there is one more thing that we did bring up. What is this right to vote on tax.com?
Yes, the right to vote on taxes.com. If you go to right to vote on taxes.com, you can get the petition for another really important initiative that's going to qualify for the 2024 ballot. And this is called the Taxpayer Protection and Government Accountability Act. And one of the things it will do is require all state taxes, like the gas tax, for instance, to go on the ballot for voter approval, in addition to being passed in the legislature. And it also closes up some loopholes that have been created by the courts, loopholes in Prop 13 that need to be closed, and this will close them. So go to righttovoteontaxes.com and click Get the Petition. We will mail it right out to you, and you can sign it, get a couple of friends to sign it, send it back to us, and get that qualified for 2024. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and how much time do we have? That's good to know, because we're 2024. Some people might think that there is time, but there's not enough calendar.
This was coexisting at the same time as the repeal of the death tax effort, It started a little later. So these have 180 days under state law to collect the signatures before time runs out. So this one, the Taxpayer Protection Act, started a little bit later, and it missed the deadline to get on the 2022 ballot, but it can still qualify now for the 2024 ballot. Time will run out on this at the end of July. We don't have very much time. But if you go to righttovoteontaxes.com and get the petition, we mail it out to you. You get it back to us by July 12th. Those signatures will count toward the number that's needed to make sure it qualifies.
Awesome. Susan, thank you so much for coming on the program to tell us all you know.
Thank you, Andres. It's a pleasure to be with you.